Good day, everyone. Welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange Conference Call. And now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Christy Snyder. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is debugging Java problems in CICS. Today's topic is debugging Java problems in CICS, and today's presenter is Shayla Robinson. Shayla joined IBM in July 1997 as a customer support representative for CICS. Over the years, she has acquired experience providing assistance to customers on various problems. In recent years, she has begun focusing on Java programming language and its introduction into CICS. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Shayla Robinson. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. Please turn to slide 2, please. This presentation, titled Debugging Java Applications in CICS, is basically a guideline on how to handle different types of Java and CICS-related problems that can occur. During the presentation, we will be covering things such as the types of problems that can occur within a KIX JVM environment. We'll take a look at what type of documentation you can gather to analyze the various problems. We'll also take a look at some common hints and tips that can occur for problems that occur during setup or configuration. We'll then take a look at some of the things that you can do to tune the JVM CICS environment to provide better JVM performance. Slide 3, please. There are various types of problems that can occur when running Java applications within a CICS environment. Problems can occur due to errors in the JVM configuration, or user errors based on how the JVM is set up within the region, or how the environment variables are defined in the JVM profile. Application errors can occur, such as exceptions or add-ins within CICS, within the JVM, or within the JIT compile code. There are sometimes problems within the KIX and Java code, or the EJB or SHIRAZ code, which is the resettable JVM. And last but not least, you can receive performance problems that can occur based on how the JVM and CICS is tuned. Slide 4, please. For CICS-related problems, there are a few key items of documentation that you should gather. First and foremost, you should provide any CICS messages that are occurring and any CICS dumps that are taken. These are things such as the DFH AP 1300 message and dump, or the DFH SJ0205, which are commonly issued. These items are helpful for any type of add-ins that occur when running Java applications in CICS. In addition, you should provide the event log, which will show the JVM property settings and if any unresettable events have occurred within the persistent reusable JVM. Please note that the list of documentation is documented via the KIX Support website, which you can access via the URL at the top of this slide. Slide 5, please. You should also provide the standard error and the standard out files. These files will contain the Java stack trace for any Java exceptions that occur. For any add-ins that occur within the JVM or that are detected by the JVM, a Java dump may be produced, as well as a Java T dump or LEC E dump. If these three documentations are available, you should also provide them for analysis. We'll discuss them a little later on in more detail. Slide 6, please. An NVS system dump of the CICS region is usually taken when an add-in occurs resulting from some type of failure, either within the JVM or within the LE enclave. Although these dumps are useful, most of the time they do not provide the complete picture and allow for full analysis of the problem. So for problems that occur where either the Java is hanging or looping, or a loop or hang is occurring within CICS, you should provide an NVS console dump, which can be taken via this dumpcom equal command, and this will produce a Java SVC dump that you can provide for analysis. Please note that you will need the ONVS ASID in order to issue this command. Slide 7, please. some additional documentation that you may need to provide, but it's not necessarily required for resolving CICS or Java-related problems. For tuning problems, you may be asked to provide a JVM profile and a JVM property file. This will show any errors when you're trying to alter the heap sizes, any EJB or name server problems that may occur, or any problems within the class path. You can take a look at these two files for more information. If you happen to receive a Java message, such as an out-of-memory error, you can take a dump on that message. Usually in this situation, the actual problem occurs prior to when the problem is detected by CICS or the JVM. And so in order to get a dump taken on the message, you can issue these three commands, set these three variables within your JVM profile to take a dump on that message. The first variable, IBM underscore XD underscore COE underscore name, specifies the Java message to dump on. The next variable, Java underscore dump underscore OPTS, specifies that a sys dump should be taken. And the last variable, Java underscore dump underscore tdump underscore pattern, will specify the dump naming convention. Please note that if you're using JDK version 1.3, you should use the option IBM underscore Java underscore ZOS underscore tdump underscore pattern instead for the Java dump name convention. Slide 8, please. You may also be asked to provide a trace of the JVM. This is written to the KIX internal trace, but it can also be included in the NVS system dump if you have the JVM tracing active. In addition, this trace can also be written to the KIX auxiliary trace or the KIX GTF trace as well. Any JVM messages that you receive that occur due to any add-ins within the JVM, any failures that may be occurring within the JIT compiled code or within the garbage collection code, we'll also want to take a look at those as well. And for any out-of-memory problems or errors that you receive, you want to provide any heap dumps that were taken. Slide 9, please. Additionally, for any reset events that occur within the Shiraz persistent reusable JVM, you'll want to provide the JVM URE log. This will show information about any events such as the unresettable events, any cross-heap references, any reset trace events, and any JVM reset events. For problems that occur in the execution flow of the Java code, you provide a method-by-method trace. Well, this will trace everything within the JVM, or you could set it to trace a specific method. And this is a good way to determine a problem that's occurring within the flow of the method calls. And for performance problems such as high CPU uses, you could provide the JVM profiler output. And you can set this via the X run H prof option within the JVM profile. Please note that the location of the diagnostics will vary depending on the nature of the problem and who is in control at the time of the problem. Slide 10, please. Next, we're going to take a look at a few hints and tips that can come up when dealing with the CICS or Java support groups and some common questions that you may be asked. The first is which JVM mode you are using. You can use the CMT inquire JVM command to verify things such as if you're using the correct JVM profile as you expect, if the JVM is running in resettable mode or continuous mode, or if you are using the shared class cache. You can also verify if the JVM is running in the correct execution key, HIX key or user key. You may be asked if you can start a JVM. If not, you should check the KIX region's user ID and make sure that the OMBS segment is defined. You should also check the JVM profile and make sure the various CICS-related options are set correctly. There's usually a message issued when the JVM has not been started within the region. Slide 11, please. Verify if Java is actually installed on your CICS system by issuing the echo $path command or the print environment space path option within Unix system services. You want to make sure that the bin subdirectory where your Java installation is installed, the path to the bin subdirectory is included on the path variable. Has the JVM abended? You'll want to check the CICS message log or the JES system log for any messages to indicate some type of add-in. CICS will usually issue a DSH SJ0205 message, which indicates that either the JVM has abended or some native code running under the JVM has abended. All CICS really knows is that there was a problem and that CEPIPI has returned an error code to us. Do you find the Java dump within the working directory? If you do, then we'll be able to use this dump to determine where the abin is occurring. If you don't see the Java dump within the work underscore dir directory, then you can set the Java underscore dump underscore ops parameter within the JVM profile to specify that a Java dump should be taken. In the example on the last bullet, you see, which is the Kix default, we're specifying a Java dump, a CE dump, as well as a sys dump will be taken when the abin next occurs. Slide 12, please. If you are receiving some type of abin, you should try disabling the JIT compiler to see if the problem still occurs. If it does, then this is a good indication that the problem is not a JIT problem. If the problem doesn't still occur, then this may or may not indicate that it is a JIT problem, but it's not guaranteed. Note that although this is not recommended, it can be used as a workaround until the actual problem is resolved. In addition, you could try disabling the mixed mode interpreter and see if the problem still occurs. The mixed mode interpreter is used to spread the compilation of methods out over the lifetime of the JVM. It's coupled tightly with the JIT compiler, so usually you can either disable the JIT and keep the MMI running, or you can disable both the JIT and the MMI, or keep the JIT active and disable the MMI to see if the problem still occurs. In order to disable the MMI, you should set the IBM underscore mix underscore mode underscore threshold environment variable to 0. Ensure that the ZIT is on and then run your program and see if the problem still occurs. Slide 13, please. Sometimes you will be asked what version or build level of the Java SDK you are using. You can verify this a couple of ways. First, you can issue the Java space dash version or Java space dash full version within OpenVS and obtain the JDK build level that way. It's also possible to set the option com.ibm.kix.showjavaversion equals true within the JVM properties file and restart the JVM. This will cause the DSH SJ0901 message to be issued containing the Java version. As a third option, you can review any Java dumps if they are available. There are two info APARs, II13338 and II13519, which maintain a table that lists the SDK service levels and the PTFs for the JDK. You may want to reference these info APARs from time to time and install the latest SR levels to take advantage of any improved services, performance, and stability enhancements that are included within the JDK. Slide 14, please. When a problem occurs in CICS, you usually will receive a message that may result in a CICS dump. However, if the problem is really occurring in a JVM or within the JIT compiled code or within the garbage collection code, you will need an additional dump to help diagnose the problem. This is usually a Java T dump or a Java SEC dump. You can control the behavior of the dumps via the Java underscore dump underscore ops environment variable. This option is specified within the JVM profile. You can set it to take a Java dump, a CE dump, and or a Java sys dump. By default, CICS 2.3 and above will request all three of these dumps to be taken. Please note that specifying dump equals yes or dump equals no within a JVM profile will have no effect on any release of CICS whatsoever. For more information, you can reference the KIX diagnostics guide on how to set up to take a Java dump within CICS. Slide 15, please. On COS, there are three types of dumps that can be taken for Java-related problems. As we mentioned, the Java dump is a formatted dump taken by the JVM. It provides a summary of the internal state of the JVM when it unexpectedly crashes. This is a text file located within the working directory within your Unix system services environment. The second dump is a sysdump, or sometimes known as a tdump, and this is just a standard SVC dump taken by the JVM when it crashes. You can override the default name for this dump using the environment variable java underscore dump underscore tdump underscore pattern. And the last dump is a CE dump, which is a formatted application level dump taken by the LE dump services. This dump may contain useful information also related to the problem, but for most cases, the sysdump is the most helpful in diagnosing admins within KIX JVM environment. Slide 16, please. From time to time, you will need to review the LE runtime options, which affect the operation of C or C++ programs, such as the JVM. You may also need to take a look at the environment variables, which affect how the JVM operates. From release to release, some variables may become deprecated, or the meanings may change, so you want to make sure as you upgrade to a new release that the variables still apply and that the meanings are the same. You also want to verify the private storage settings within the LE enclave, which is used for allocating the Java heap and the JIT compiler work areas. If there is not enough private storage, problems can occur such as out-of-memory errors, failures trying to load DLLs, or failures during startup trying to initialize the Java subcomponents completely. Slide 17, please. There are several environment variables that can be set to affect the operation of the JVM. You can issue a set command within Unix System Services to obtain a list of the current environment variables. If you want to verify a particular variable, you can use the echo command. And if you want to set a particular variable, you can use the export command. It is also possible to use a profile or dot profile within Unix System Services to set these variables as well. This chart, along with the next page, shows some of the variables that can or should be set within the CICS region. Some are specific to the ZOS system, and some are specific to KIX. You should consult the manuals for the various products for additional information on the specific variables that are needed to be set. Slide 18, please. And this chart just shows some of the additional variables that are specific to the JIT compiler, to the Java dump, and the heap dump. Slide 19, please. There is some additional documentation you can obtain to diagnose the JVM and any problems that occur. You can trace any garbage collection activity that occurs by setting verbose equals GC in the JVM profile. You can set verbose equals JNI to trace the use of any native methods in JNI activity, or you can set verbose equals class to display information on each loaded classes. For JIT-related issues, you can help find a failing JIT compiled method by setting JITC underscore compileOps equals compiling and running your program again. This causes the JIT compiler to print two messages for each method as it compiles the method. The first message will indicate that the JIT compiler has started compiling the method, and the second message indicates that compilation has completed. Viewing these two messages, if compilation never completes, then that indicates the failing method. Note, in addition, you can also specify within the JVM properties file com.ibm.jit.compileop, and this will also set the JIT compile method tracing. Based on this output, you can then generate debug output trace and map files. You can set this via the debug option jitc_debugop, and these files will help shed more light on the problem. These two options are usually set based on the recommendations from JIT support. So usually JIT support has been contacted and they've asked you to set these variables, but it is possible to set them regardless. Slide 20, please. It is possible to trace the Java application and any JVM activity that occurs. You can produce or control a JVM trace in several ways. These steps show how to produce the trace through system properties using the trace properties file. By default, trace is disabled. The ibm.dg.trc.properties parameter specifies a file which contains any system properties you want to specify for the JVM trace. For additional information, you can take a look at the Java Diagnostics Guide, which provides information on setting the JVM tracing. Slide 21, please. For performance problems, such as high CPU usage, you may want to turn on the JVM profiler. You can set this access by specifying xrunhprof within the JVM properties file. The output from this option will be in the working directory in a file called java.hprof.txt. To diagnose problems in the code path or trace the method entries and exits, you can turn on method tracing. Again, you enable this by setting three methods within the JVM properties file. The first, ibm.gg.trc.print equals mt to specify you want to trace the methods. ibm.gg.trc.methods, which specifies the methods you want to trace. In this example, we're tracing all the methods that will be called. And ibm.dg.trc.output equals standard error specifies where you want the output to go. Please note that it is possible to trace specific methods. So if you want to trace the methods that are called for the Hello World kick sample program, you can set the second option to example/hello world/hello world, and only those methods will be traced. Slide 22, please. The performance and tuning were greatly improved in the later releases of CICS. The profile statistics are collected for each JVM profile and each execution key. They will tell you about the use of JVM profiles within a CICS region. You can use these statistics to help tune the storage heap setting for each of your JVM. The JVM program statistics tell you about the Java programs running in a JVM. And the JVM pool statistics will tell you about the activity in the JVM pool for a CICS region and about the shared class cache. There are statistics to show the envious storage requests above the line. You can also review statistics for each J8 and J9 TCBs. Runtime options can also be provided for the JVM via the DFH JVM RO User Replaceable module. This module is invoked during the CEPIPI pre-initialization phase of the LE enclave that is created for JVM. It allows you to alter the default language environment runtime options. Please note that this user replaceable module must be written in assembler and is not translated. For additional information on tuning the language environment enclave storage, you may reference this KIX performance guide. Slide 23, please. These statistics demonstrate the difference between using a continuous JVM with reuse equals yes specified versus a resettable JVM with reuse equals reset and the class cache being used. It shows the JVM pool statistics for these two JVMs. It should be noted that CPU usage for continuous JVM For the continuous JVM is 2 times lower than resettable JVM processing, the same workload. Also, please note that there were higher weights for available JVMs using the continuous JVM. The KIX JVM dispatching algorithm is very efficient, and the weight did not contribute to higher response time or higher CPU usage. Slide 24, please. This is an example of the JVM profile statistics for these same two JVMs. And as you can see information such as the TCB uses for the JM, J8, and if there are any J9 TCBs. You can also see within the JVM profile stats any information regarding the total number of class cache JVM requests or any unresettable event status. Slide 25, please. JVMs use storage that is managed by NVS, and so they cannot make use of the storage management facilities available from the existing CICS storage manager. Therefore, in KIX Transaction Server 2.3, a new storage monitor was provided for NVS storage. As JVMs make requests for NVS storage, the storage monitor checks whether the availability of NVS storage has dropped below preset thresholds and notifies CICS when this is the case. Once KIX has been notified that NVS storage is constrained, the actions it takes, depending on the seriousness of the problem, are as follows. When NVS storage is constrained, KIX deletes JVMs in the JVM pool that are not currently in use, together with their TCBs. However, new JVMs can still be created for any incoming requests. When NVS storage is severely constrained, KIX temporarily prevents the creation of any new JVMs for incoming requests and behaves as though the max JVM TCB's limit has been reached and that the JVM pool is full. KIX then terminates all JVMs as soon as they finish running their current Java program. If limited NVS storage is available and the storage monitor is still receiving requests from KIX to create JVMs, it queues any such requests that cannot obtain sufficient NVS storage. When KIX manages to reduce its use of NVS storage by these methods, and the availability of NVS storage has risen above the preset threshold, the storage monitor informs CICS that it can return to normal operation. As KIX returns to normal operation, operator messages inform you when NVS storage is no longer constrained. When you receive operator messages relating to these events, or if you see in the statistics report, the time has been spent in waits caused by NVS storage constraints, you should examine why the NVS storage constraints occurred and take any actions necessary to prevent them from reoccurring. Slide 26, please. The default setting for max JVM TCBs is 5, where the minimum permitted value is 1, which means that KIX is always able to create at least one open TCB. You have to be careful not to overspecify this value. Each JVM runs in its own LE enclave and uses NVS storage. For this reason, you need to choose a max JVM TCB's limit for your CICS region based on the amount of NVS storage available for the use of the region and the amount of NVS storage used by each of your JVMs. If you set a max JVM TCB's limit that is too high, KIX might attempt to create too many JVMs for the available NVS storage. This will result in NVS storage constraints. You may want to do volume testing in your development environment, issuing frequent statistics and setting max JVM TCB relatively low, usually under 8. Reviewing this KIX shutdown statistics will help you determine how much of NVS storage is used by each JVM will enable you to calculate what max JVM TCB limit should be for optimum performance, while leaving enough cushion for unallocated NVS storage for the KIX address space. If you have determined that your KIX region could benefit from an increase in the number of JVMs, you will need to calculate the maximum number of JVMs that your KIX region could support. To calculate the maximum number of JVMs your CICS can allocate, you should take the free storage available within the KIX address space and divided by the amount of storage needed per each JVM. You can also calculate the amount of storage needed for each JVM from the storage heap settings within your JVM profile. Above the 16 megabyte line, the amount of storage used for a JVM can be calculated by adding the amount of storage specified by the XMX option in the JVM profile to the basic storage cost for the type of JVM. Slide 27, please. You want to avoid the number of JVM mismatches and JVM TCB spills that occur if possible. When an application requests a JVM, CICS first tries to find a suitable JVM that is available for reuse within the JVM pool. If there is not an available JVM with the correct profile and execution key, and match JVM TCBs has not been reached, KICS will create one. If there is no suitable JVM and no space, KICS can destroy and recreate a JVM or steal one. This is similar in cost to the JVM becoming unresettable, which is why you want to avoid them. You may want to limit the numbers of a certain type of JVM. If you're not satisfied with the measures KICS is taking to avoid mismatches and steals for that type of JVM, you might find that the requests are waiting longer than the critical period that is defined by KICS. And so KICS is giving the request free JVMs with the wrong profile execution key and causing a mismatch or a steal. You can take a look at the CICS statistics to see if the incident of mismatches and steals in the JVM pool is greater than you would like. These statistics can be accessed online using the ExecKICS Collect Statistics JVM Profile command. And this will show the number of TCB mismatches and TCB steals for the TCB J8 and J9 modes. It will also show the overall incidence of mismatches and steals within the JVM pool. There is no parameter to control the number of JVMs with each JVM profile that KICS keeps in the pool. However, you can indirectly limit the number of JVMs with a particular JVM profile by limiting the number of transactions that request a JVM with that profile. And this can be done via the trend class definition for the transactions which execute JVM profile programs requiring that JVM profile. Slide 28, please. You will want to watch out for any actions that can cause a JVM to become unresettable. It is important that application classes do not perform actions that make the JVM unresettable, causing recycling of the JVM and paying for additional CPU overhead associated with this process. When a persistent reusable JVM is used, the assumption is that middleware performs whatever control and cleanup is necessary to restore the JVM state to an acceptable value prior to the next transaction. To help you debug why a JVM becomes unresettable, you will need to set the JVM system property ibm.jvm.unresettable.events.level. This will enable the logging of any unresettable events in a resettable JVM and set the level of logging that is required. Specifying min will produce a list of reason codes that defines the unresettable events found. Specifying max will produce the reason code and will also produce a stack trace where appropriate. To see these unresettable events, you will need to set the option ibm.jvm.events.output system property to enable event logging. Slide 29, please. A JVM manages its runtime storage in several segregated heaps within the system heap and the non-system heap. The system heap may consist of two types of heaps, the system heap, which contains the class definitions for all the system classes, standard extension classes, and the middleware classes, the application class system heap, which contains objects which persist for the lifetime of the JVM. The non-system heap may consist of two types of storage heaps of variable size. The middleware heap, this usually contains objects that are constructed by the middleware classes, and the transient heap, which is for objects whose lifetime is the same as the transaction using the JVM. Tuning the JVM heap storage allows you to reduce the storage required for each JVM. It can also eliminate any unnecessary CPU time that has been expanding the heap and running garbage collection. All heap storage requirements depend on the complexity of the Java applications that run in a JVM. It depends on whether or not the JVM is using the shared class cache. Worker JVMs require less storage than standalone JVMs, but you will need to set aside storage for each region for the shared class cache itself. And the level of reusability for the JVM also plays a factor in how much heap storage is required. For continuous and single-use JVMs, these two JVM types do not have an application class system heap or a transient heap, because these types of JVMs are not reset after each use, so this also affects the amount of heap storage required. And also for continuous JVMs, you want to keep in mind that the storage heaps in these JVMs are not automatically cleaned up after each program invocation. Slide 30, please. The initial sizes for the storage heaps in a JVM are defined by the options in the JVM profile. All of the heaps can expand within the storage available to them. The maximum sizes of the system heap and the application class system heap are only restricted by the amount of storage available within the LE enclave for the JVM. The maximum sizes for the middleware heap and the transient heap are restricted by the maximum size set for the non-system heap, which is specified within the JVM profile via the XMX option. If you specify the maximum size for the non-system heap, that means you are specifying the total maximum size for the middleware and transient heaps as well. The initial heap size settings should be tuned based on the garbage collection output. In the above bullet, you see some suggested heap sizes, initial heap sizes that can be used and tuned to your preferences. You can override the LE runtime options using the DFH JVM RO user replaceable module. The default LE storage settings that control the initial size and the incremental additions to the LE enclave heap storage can make inefficient use of NVS storage. Therefore, CICS applies some default storage settings within DFH JVM RO which are more efficient. However, you can modify these settings to match the storage use of your JVMs more closely. To improve the use of NVS storage, you are recommended to use DFH JVM RO to set the initial allocation for the amount of LE enclave heap storage to a value that approximates to the storage actually used by your Java applications running in your CICS region. These settings apply to all the JVMs within your CICS region, except the master JVM. So you should consider the different storage heap sizes and the basic storage costs that JVMs with different profiles might have. So identify a suitable value for the initial allocation for the amount of LE enclave heap storage. You can use the RPTO on and RPTS on options within the DFH JVM RO to obtain storage reports when a JVM ends as part of CICS output. These options increase the amount of CPU, so they should not be used in a production region. Please note that DFH JVM RO cannot identify the JVM profile to which each storage report applies, so you should use this procedure for only one JVM profile at a time, by only using transactions that request only that profile. The CICS Performance Guide has additional information on tuning storage for individual JVMs and the LE enclave as well. Slide 31, please. Multiple JVMs can share a single cache of class files that have already been loaded, including some that have been optimized by compilation. This cache is shared by all worker JVMs. The size of this cache is controlled by the JVM CC size SIT parameter. This cache should be large enough to hold all classes that will be used by the application. So for the better performance, you should specify the application classes you want to be cached via the shareable application class path. For standalone JVM, the classes will be cached in the JVM. They will be kept across any JVM reuses and then reinitialized if the JVM was reset. For the best performance in a resettable JVM, you should add application classes to the shareable application class path. And to reduce the requirement for heap storage, you should avoid using the standard class path for worker JVM in a production environment. The system property ibm.jvm.shareable.application.class.path is the parameter within the JVM properties file that is used to specify the application classes that you would wish to be cached within the shareable application class path. Slide 32, please. This is another area that presents tuning opportunities that many may not be aware of. The shared library region is a ZOS feature that enables your KIX regions to share the DLLs that are needed for JVM. This avoids having each region have to load the DLLs individually, which can greatly reduce the amount of real storage used by NVS. And it also can reduce the time it takes for the regions to load the files. The storage that is reserved for the shared library region is allocated in each CICS region when the first JVM is started in that region. The amount of storage that is allocated is controlled by the shared live region size parameter within the ZOS BPX PRM number of sys1.parmlive. The minimum is 16 megabytes, and the ZOS default is 64 megabytes. You can tune the amount of storage that is allocated for the shared library region by investigating how much space you actually need, bearing in mind that other applications besides CICS might be using the shared library region, and adjusting this parameter accordingly. If you want to reduce the amount of storage that's allocated for the shared library region, you want to first check that you do not have wasted space in your shared library region. So if you bring up a normal workload on your ZOS system, and then issue the command dspace omvs, L, this will display the library statistics. If there is unused space in the shared library region, you can reduce the setting of the shared live region size parameter to remove the space. If KIX is the only user of the shared library region, you can also reduce this parameter to the minimum of 16 megabytes because the DLLs needed for this JVM only use around 10 megabytes of the region. So basically, you want to tune the amount of storage based on how much space you really need, bearing in mind that other applications besides KIX use this region. Please know that if you underallocate this region, you will not benefit from the sharing facility, since when the shared library region is full, the files will be loaded into private storage instead. Slide 33, please. Now we're going to take a look at tuning garbage collection. CICS forces the garbage collection cycle by default every 101 transactions. This cycle can be configured to occur more often or less often using the max_reset_2_GC option, which is specified within the JVM profile. Garbage collection is the process of automatically freeing objects that are no longer referenced by the program. Any garbage collection algorithm must do two things. It must detect garbage objects, and it must reclaim the heap space used by the garbage object and make that space available again to the program. The IBM SDK implementation uses a garbage collection algorithm called Mark Sweep Compact, or MSC. And this is named after three distinct phases. The first is the mark phase, which identifies all the objects that are reachable or alive. The second phase, the sweep phase, finds all the garbage on the heap and deallocates it. And the third phase, the compact phase, removes all the empty memory holes or fragments by moving the live objects together in the heap. The JVM profile option XMX specifies the maximum size in bytes of the memory allocation pool. This is a fixed amount of storage allocated by the JVM during initialization to define the maximum total size for the transient and middleware heap. Setting XMX too small could cause excessive garbage collection to occur. This will show up as a spike in the JVM reset time our JVMR times field. If it is set too big, this will cause virtual storage to be overused and thus JVM to be created per region. Slide 34, please. So this slide shows a normal output from a garbage collection occurrence. The output from each garbage collection can show you how many of the garbage collections were automatically requested by KIC and how many were caused by allocation failures. It will show how many times the storage heaps were expanded and what size the storage heaps reached before the JVM no longer needed to expand them. From the output, you can also see whether the JVM profile for the JVM contains the right settings for the initial and maximum sizes of the storage heaps. You can check that you have not specified the appropriate storage for the needs of the programs that run in the JVM. When you have optimized your use of virtual storage for each JVM, you might be able to increase the number of JVMs in your CICS region if needed. This chart describes the various things that this output is telling you. So again, in this example, which is normal garbage collection output, you can tell how many allocation failures occurred and how many garbage collections occurred that were requested by KIC. Slide 35, please. This example shows a problem in the garbage collection output. There are actually three garbage collection actions that occurred that needed to find space for a 12 megabyte object to be allocated. It took about 4 seconds in garbage collection processing and about 2 seconds in stopping the thread. You can note from the underlined item that the first garbage collection occurred due to compaction. Compaction, remember, is just sliding the live objects so they are adjacent in memory. It can occur for various reasons, which in this example is for reason code 1, which indicates that following the mark and sweep phase, there was insufficient free space for the allocation request to complete. Slide 36, please. Now we're going to take a look at some common problems that you may come across when setting up and configuring your JVM or JKIC environment within CICS. The next few slides will also go over a few of these problems. A problem can occur when trying to compile a Java application if you're not in the correct directory where the make file is located. You can also run into problems if you don't have the right permission set for the KIC user ID, such as execute permission to change to a directory or write permission when trying to compile a module. Slide 37, please. If you do not have the environment variable set correctly, such as KIC underscore home or Java underscore home, you can run into problems when trying to compile or run a Java application transaction. It's possible from time to time you may receive an ASJ dog JD admin or a DFHSJ 0503 error message when running a Java transaction if your variable settings are not correct or if you are using the wrong level of the Java SDK. Slide 38, please. There are various CICS admins and DFHSJ messages that can occur when running JVM transactions. These are usually due, again, to the environment variables not being set correctly. If you're using DFHJVMRO, you'll want to make sure that it was only assembled and not translated, or you'll receive a DFHSJ 0206 message indicating a problem trying to initialize the LE enclave. Slide 39, please. If you receive a DFHAP 0001 message indicating a 4093 admin has occurred and DFHAP LJ1, this is most likely due to the KIC region user ID not having RACF authority to open the HFS structure. Also, if you don't have the environment variables KIC underscore home or Java underscore home specified correctly, you can receive additional errors when compiling the Java application. Slide 40, please. If the TSO region size is too small, you may receive a JVM DBG001 MATLAB failure and out of memory message. If you notice a performance degradation when running Java applications under Qt, you may want to check that the settings for the down stack are not too low. This is the fifth and sixth parameter of the LE stack option, which deals specifically with XP link applications such as the JVM. Slide 41, please. Now we're going to take a look at some information you can gather from an actual dump. For example, AP1300 dump. From a CICS perspective, first thing you want to know is which address spaces were included in the dump and which one is the actual admin occurring in. Once you have the address space, you'll want to determine which tasks are running in the region and then which thread TCB is receiving the admin. If you go to some format, you can take a look at the bottom for any non-zero termination codes for each TCB. If there's more than one TCB that admin, you want to take a look at their TCB RB structure. The adminning task will usually show as taking a dump. Slide 42, please. Once you have the address space and the TCB address, you can format out the LE control blocks, which will show information about the program check that is occurring. If you search on the word ABCD for a non-zero code, you will find the CIB and the ZMCH control block. This will give you the PSW and registers for the program check. Keep in mind that Reg 4 will be the address of the DSA, and Reg 12 will be the address of the CAA at the time of the error. Once you have the PSW and regs, you can use the PSW and go into browse mode. Go to that address and try to identify what module or method the admin is occurring in. However, this is sometimes difficult to do. So you can take a look at the LE traceback. Slide 43, please. An easier way is to use the LE traceback to identify where the admin is occurring. Based on the naming convention of the traceback entry, you can somewhat tell where the problem is occurring. For example, if the entry begins with MMIP or is exec Java, this usually indicates the problem is occurring in JIT interpreted code. You will need to determine what class or method is executing. If the entry is a full path to a class or method, it is admitting in JIT compiled code. If the entry begins with G3, this usually indicates it's either the JIT compiler is executing or the JIT compiler is throwing an exception. If the entry name contains underscores, it's most likely a C or C++ method. And if the entry is a single word, this usually indicates a C runtime function that has been called from C or C++ code. You'll want to remember that the LE traceback is a bottom-up stack. You can identify the admitting entry depending on the LE traceback information that is provided. To identify the module, you can look for any CEE type modules under the entry column and look at the entry right below it. In this example, you find the CEE OSIGJ module, which identifies an interrupt signal has occurred. If you note right below it, the selling module is the entry for MMIP select invoke Java method. This is where the admin is actually occurring. Slide 44, please. This is another example of the LE traceback showing an admin. In this example, the CEE HDSP LE module indicates that the admin has occurred. And in this case, you see that it is a path name, which indicates the application. The admin is occurring in JIT compiled code. Slide 45, please. This last example also shows an admin occurring. I included this slide just to show that if the stat column is included, as you see here on the far right end, if you look for the word exception, or in this case it's topped off so you see EXCE, this will indicate the failing method. But if this column is not included in the traceback, you can use the previous steps to identify the addending entry. Slide 46, please. Depending on the type of dump you are using within ITCS, sometimes the traceback may or may not format out completely. The first bullet shows some different ways you can get to the Java stack or traceback or determine where the addend is occurring. For waits or loops type problems or problems where high CPU is occurring, you'll want to take a look at the MVS sys-trace for the TCBs in question. And if you're not sure which TCB may have addended, again, take a look at the sum format information and look for any TCBs with a non-zero completion code. Slide 47, please. The next two slides show a few dump commands that can be used when reviewing a CICS or Java dump via ITCS. You can format out information about the TCBs, the heap segments, the LE control blocks, or the LE threads traceback information if needed. Slide 48, please. You can also format information about the error, virtual storage, or the TCBRB structure. You can also format information about the thread from a Unix system services perspective as well. Slide 49, please. This slide includes some additional information for Kix-related problems that can be found via the Kix support website, as well as the Kix tech notes available via IBM link. Slide 50, please. This chart includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. Developer Works offers in-depth technical information. The events link on support pages points you to webcasts and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. Slide 51, please. That's the end of my presentation, so I'd like to turn control back over to Christy.
Thank you, Shayla, for a great presentation. And at this point, Matt, we would like to open the lines for questions. I will now turn the call over to Shayla Robinson.
Thank you, Christy.
At this point, we do not have any questions in queue.
Thank you, Matt. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation as well. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Shayla, for presenting.
Once again, this does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.